This is the Dance More, Laugh More podcast, your favorite music podcast.
Baby, you can take your time.
What's up, everyone? It's DJ Calculation Zub, and this is another episode of the Dance More, Laugh More podcast, continuing my talks with classical music with saxophonist Tyler Flowers. Tyler Flowers, how are you today?
I'm good, man. My arm's a little sore. Got that vaccine.
Oh, the sweet vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So can I ask which one you had?
I got Moderna.
Oh, Moderna gang.
Moderna. Did you get Moderna too?
I got Pfizer.
You got, I don't think you,
it doesn't matter.
Glad I didn't get the one shot one, because I've just heard from everyone I know that has gotten the Johnson & Johnson that they felt like doo-doo.
You know what? I kind of wish I got the Johnson & Johnson so I could just one and done, baby. That's it. Keeping it moving.
I feel you. Cause now it's like, we got to wait a month, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. And they're like, be careful, while everyone with Johnson & Johnson is slamming beers in public, you know, spreading room. But
yeah, man.
Any vaccine, whatever. For everyone listening, any vaccine is a good vaccine. Get vaccinated, y'all. Should have been paid by the CDC, but it wasn't.
But paid for by the CDC.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, so. So to keep this these classical talks going, it's actually pretty awesome that I have Tyler Flowers on, because I don't talk to anyone about classical music, and I just spoke to him a little bit earlier about how he doesn't either. You know, you're just getting out of school, correct?
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, you guys are probably like, oh my goodness, Beethoven, amazing, you know, so.
I don't think I've spoken to anyone about Beethoven in like 3 years, man.
Okay, well, yeah, whatever. But anyway, coming with the sass today. Wanted to talk about classical crossovers. Now, when I was in school and studying music, I would always see these like classical pop musicians. You know, basically, you like, if you're in Barnes and Noble and you're like scrolling through, I guess, I don't even know if they sell CDs anymore, but I remember when I was studying, I would see all these like Green Sleeves, Irish Folk Dancing, Andre Rieu, Yanni type stuff. And I was like, this isn't real classical music. This is just pop and trashy. But my tune changed, because I actually started working for a classical musician that plays alternative music. He plays all kinds of stuff. He was playing hip hop, jazz. Like, so when I started DJing for him, I had to kind of get over this whole, classical musicians can't do crossovers because it's corny. But, you know, in my head, there's still some classical musicians that I do seem. It's just the training in me, I think, that makes me think that it's corny per se. But I'm going to ask Tyler a couple of them. If he knows any saxophone players that you like that are good classical crossovers, musicians that basically play other genres of music besides classical music. Now, the first one I wanted to bring up, probably pretty obvious, is Lindsey Stirling. So Lindsey Stirling is a violinist. And one thing that is notably what I remember of her is, doesn't matter what your race, religion, creed is, or whatever, but I do know the Church of Latter-day Saints. They back her hard. Like, if you go on their website, I'm not even messing with you, man. You go on their website, Church of Latter-day Saints, you know, she going hard on there. I remember she had a section on the website, and like, it's a big deal. Like, she's of the Mormon faith, and they going hard for her. Like for real. I remember like some people knocked on my door once, and they were Mormons, you know, spreading, you know, the good word. And I was like, yo, y'all know Lindsey Stirling? And they're like, well, she's Mormon, but we don't know her. So the end. Great story. But she is a violinist that does classical crossover stuff. Most notably, got famous by a song she did called Crystallize. was pretty big in the YouTube era, is what I would say, like maybe like 5-10 years ago. You might have seen it. I don't know if you have, but it's this white girl that kind of dances a little like saucy and sultry, and she's known for her dance moves. She is a dancer, I believe. So she likes to incorporate dance in her playing. And I'll tell you this. I thought when I first saw her that this was the corniest shit that I've ever seen in my life. I thought it was so whack. Like all I could imagine was her moving around, how distracting it was. And then in my head as the classical musician, I was like, well, she can't dance like that. She's going to be, her bow is going to be going crazy. You know? So wow. I thought that, yes. So I thought, I was like, I was like, no way, you know, this is, works and people like her. But when I start doing things with this violinist, Daniel D, check him out if you want to hear a dope violinist play jazz, R&B, hip hop. But I start with him, you know, we had a discussion and it was just like, there's music out there for everybody and different ways you play your instrument, different styles, different genres of music. So in my head, I thought it was corny, but you know, to the millions of fans she has, I mean, clearly it's not, because she has millions of fans and she plays what I would say is like the pop, you know, version of violin, where she will play like something classical or something like a Mozart line or whatever on violin over like a dubstep beat. And there's, you know, there's a couple of other classical musicians that do that. Basically every black violinist out there I've had some form or fashion dealings with, or the ones I work with know them, like 6 degrees of separation type thing. So I got over the whole classical crossover, like in my head of thinking, oh, well, this is corny. This isn't necessarily like good music. And I think that's just the traditional training I got. So Tyler, do you know any classical musicians that do the crossover thing as well?
Not really. But I have a lot to say on it, but like, yeah. just the usage of, like you said, like the like you said, like Mozart over a dubstep beat thing, I'm still kind of in the camp that I personally just can't listen to it. Well, it's just not, you know what I mean, I'm not ever gonna say like, hey, you don't listen to that if it makes you happy and you enjoy it, but like I think, like you said, my training just like washed that kind of thing out of my brain.
All right, so I'm about to blow your mind, bro. Okay, so okay. There is a DJ out there and a producer. I thought the same. I thought the exact same. And actually, when I was working and living in Denver, I gave this person food like every other week. I made a salad and stuff, and people were like, yo, you should talk to this guy. He's like a pretty huge producer, DJ, you know. But in my head, I'm like, this is freaking whack. I'm not listening to him. But it's a saxophonist.
Yeah. Is he classically trained, though, is the question.
I believe he is, actually. And
okay, because that's kind of like where you got me. Like, I know plenty of saxophonists that like do all the stuff you're talking about, but very few of them are actually have a degree in classical music or academic music. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by, you know, being classically trained, because
right,
you know, because
I know some excellent saxophonists that are very, very skilled, but they don't have degrees in classical saxophone. Like their background started in straight ahead standard jazz. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Well, I know that
a lot of the jazz guys, man, they'll do that stuff because when you're in that world, it starts with, I know because I've done some of it, but it starts with you getting called to play with like a wedding band. And then you got to learn all like the standard solos, like on saxophone that everyone wants to hear. You start playing with these bands that just play Billboard top 40 covers, and you get in that world.
Yeah.
Where, and also people, that's all people really pay money for when they hire bands to do events, like corporate events, weddings, you know, those kind of like more high dollar events. Or like you're playing at like the Biltmore and you have to wear a tuxedo and you're basically just treated like the help, but like,
oh, been there, done
but
that.
Then, Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, you start playing with bands that tour, and then you go play a music festival, and you meet some DJ, and they want, you know, they're like, come play my late night set with me. Just like, plug your mic in and let's do something. And then that's cool. And then before you know it, you've done these collabs, and then one day someone will be like, what kind of music do you play? And you're like, man, that's a great question. You know?
Yeah.
So like I'm all about the blurring the lines between genres, but like, if I don't want to hear like, oh, what's that song from the Titanic? I keep thinking of like, oh. My heart will go on. Yeah, my heart will go on. is it Celine Dion?
Oh yes.
And I just like, for some reason, I keep thinking of that Kenny G recording of it.
Ah, yeah.
Well, and I mean,
Kenny G, that's the first person we should have brought up.
I know, that's probably who we should have talked to. But what I'm saying is like, say what you want about that cat, man. He sells more records than any saxophonist on the face of the earth.
Yes,
dude.
Kenny G is that dude, man.
Yeah, but I can't listen to it. Like I said about some of the other stuff. Like, I mean, I can, but I can't help but laugh when I do.
Well, I think it goes along the lines of that music being a specific time or place. And this musician that I was talking about, Grizz, he actually attended, you know, college for music.
Oh, you're talking about Grizz. Oh, I know Grizz.
Oh, okay. So yeah.
Yeah. Sex, it's dude. Like dubstep. It's kind of like, who's that other DJ? Like Big Gigantic has a saxophone player, right?
Yeah. It's that funky, like glitch type, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty wonky stuff is what I would call it.
It's pretty dubstep influenced.
Yeah, and that guy, like, I used to make salads for him every now and then, and people
were
like,
you working in a restaurant or what?
Yeah, I was working at this marketplace in Denver, and
you didn't explain. I just imagine you going to his house, just making him a salad.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so interesting because like it's been multiple times I did like I a couple, and I never wanted to talk to him about music because I was like, man, this shit wet. I don't want him to talk to me about music and be like, well, yeah, I know who you are. Shit's wet. But I'm, you know, I kind of regret doing that because I listened to him over the pandemic. I started trying to open my mind up to certain other things and just food, music, whatever. And I threw Grizz on. I was like, you know, I'm a hater just to be hating. So let me try to change my attitude. I threw on one of his songs. It was called Juicy. And, you know, he's not ripping, you know, crazy sax solos, whatever. And there's like, let's be real. There's probably like one sax line in there that's like about 20 seconds. But I was like, I get it now. This is hard. It's really hard. So like,
right.
The classical crossover does work, but I'm kind of glad that you kind of have that perspective still, because I want to ask you like some certain questions about the classical crossover. Now, why do you think that classical musicians snub the classical crossover? Do you believe that it's a lack of talent or like musicality? Like, what is it?
I think it's, I think, unfortunately, a lot of times it's jealousy because those people have a lot more success than, unfortunately, and immediately. And, you know, these people are like, well, I went to New England Conservatory. Why should you get all this recognition when I clearly played the Brooke Violin Concerto better than you in undergraduate school? You know, it's like, well,
yeah,
because I marketed myself in a smart way and you didn't, you know? So, I mean,
have tons of student loan debt, not doubt.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know.
It takes a lot to say that, though. I mean, it does.
But a lot, I think there are sometimes, man, especially, so we're like, what the people we've been talking about, your Kenny G's, your Lindsey Stirlings, they're still playing their instruments at a pretty high level across the board on the spectrum of how terribly you can play violin or how terribly you can play saxophone to how amazingly, like, I mean Kenny G's got chops, man. Like, he can play, like, I bet you that dude could play like a 2-hour set like with no music, you know what I mean? So like he's ready to hit the gas all the time. Like he knows how to play saxophone. He doesn't miss notes. You know what I mean? So I can respect that the skill, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I know off the top of my head at least 5 violinists that play alternative music. And I can tell you that I can only think of one that actually on the day that we have gigs and off days, he goes in the bathroom because we were like in the hotels a lot, and takes a dump, and then he freaking plays some scales. Like he plays some scales. I'm talking like every key. And I'm like, bro, whoa, this dude is actually practicing. And
yeah, man.
And in my head,
that's what I do, man. I played my scales today, man.
In my head, I was always like, you know, I always thought that our gigs were kind of chaotic because we would go fly all over the place and we never practice. And we'd always say things like, you know, we probably would kill it, you know, even harder if we practice. But at the same, you know, I know what I do. I know what he does. So it worked very well. I mean, let's be real. DJing, practicing, it's a little different when you have to accompany someone versus when it's just me. When it's just me, I can do more. But when you're DJing for someone else, you have to follow them, listen to them. And it's almost like an ensemble, you know, where you have to listen and pay attention. And, you know, it just worked really well to the point where we didn't have to practice like as an ensemble, but individually, you know, we both had our chops up. So I think that whole myth of being like deprived of the technique that you would get from a traditional music education versus the classical crossover, for me, that was the thing. Because I would hear them play like freaking Ba Ba Black Sheep, and I'm over here playing like Shostakovich Symphony or something. I'm like,
right.
Well, they're playing freaking Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
I'm playing Shostakovich. Can't even compare. Yeah.
Right. Like,
but I think
how many people listen to Justin Bieber?
Sorry. Yeah, millions of people.
But it's one thing though to get millions of people to listen to your violin cover of Justin Bieber, though.
And I work with people, violinists that have done that. You know,
so. I know, but I'm saying like they have to really think about how they're gonna really make that song their own. You know, yeah. Instead of just trying to make it sound like the recording that you'd listen to on Spotify or something. You know.
Yeah, because there is a lot of. Believe it or not, there is a lot of classical musicians doing covers now. I bet I could look on the top 40, pick any song out right now, and just put like sax cover or violin cover.
Dude, there's actually this dude, man, I wish I remembered his name. I'll see if I can find it and send it to you later. But there's this guy that I think it was a joke, but he came out with these ridiculous, like with this ridiculous album of sax covers, but it's like, it like definitely like it low key it goes hard, dude. Like he plays like Hotline Bling, and it's like it's really good. And like he's a good saxophonist, so he can like get those inflections and stuff that like, you know, Drake might try to do on his track and stuff, or maybe even add more embellishment than the original, you know, which is like, and make it even sexier than, I mean, it's still kind of silly because it's a saxophone doing it, in my opinion, but like I can respect the skill, you know what I mean?
It's not sexy sax man, is it?
No. This is like a deep cut from the depths of Spotify. Like I would have to search for it, or I might even have to text someone and have them tell me who it is.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that I just YouTubed Hotline Bling saxophone. One.
How many results?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yeah. 7, 8. 9. 10, 11, 12, 13. Outrageous, dude. Outrageous. So
there's also, let's just go ahead and say there's no way that half of those are even close to good.
Well, I don't know. Well, you don't want to know it. It's when you're doing these covers and these classical pop covers and stuff, the thing that I think that sets some people apart is the fact that it's not just, you know, being technical and showing off your chops. It's like putting on a show and being
for
like,
sure. Absolutely
showing your showmanship and stuff, because like it's very, you got to have some type of stage presence by like playing Baby, you know, by Justin Bieber, and you're like 30 years old, you know, like you got to be able to like put some sauce or some swag on it.
Oh, yeah,
make it like, not
make it drip, dude.
Yeah, because like otherwise it just looks really cringy. And I think that's the problem that comes with classical pop music covers, like crossovers. Like, you know, we'll see like these like quartet or trios of like, you know, four, I forgot what their, I think its name is like Eroica or some crazy, you know, spaceship sounding name. And it was basically four women playing classical violin. And it looked freaking, well, first off, they were really attractive. So probably took how corny I thought it was. But when I saw it, I was like, this shit is whack. Like, this is corny. They look good. I told you, I was being a road manager for one of these violinists. And we went to this award show. And there was a, I'm not going to mention the names because I think that some of them are following me still. But there was a group of violinists there. This award show in Detroit, it was called the Rose Awards, and they wanted to bring in all of these past performers they brought in because it was like the anniversary of their award show. It was basically an award show for the food and bev industry. So they would give people awards out, and they basically open bar, brought in all these food and bev people, and you could hear the bottles just clanking around the whole show. Just, I remember a bottle dropped and you could just hear it roll like in this auditorium. They were turning up. They were turning up there. So they brought, I'll speed up the story some. They brought five violinists. Three was in a group and two were other ones. And they tried to get them all to play together. And the first run through was a mess. And I remember the woman organizing it just turned around and looked at me and was like, well, what you think? And at the time, I was a road manager for this guy. So I was like, you know, situations like that, I always tell people what they want to hear. And I'm like, well, you know, yeah, you need some work. Yeah, you need some work.
You sugarcoated it a little bit.
Oh, I did. it was a mess. You know, my friend, he killed it. And he already knew. We've been through this a million times. He knew what the deal was. He was just like, all right, I know this is going to like, burn, you know, crash and burn the first time, so let's just do it. And but the big thing about that was there was a group that was a trio, and they played, and they were playing like some like freaking the White Stripes, Seven Nation Army, and they sounded good. You can tell that they're all classically trained, but the choreography was like yeah, you know, like it just was like, you know, like just it was very like,
they were doing karate? They were doing kung fu?
No, I was making those sounds because I wanted people to like to think like how crazy like the dancing was. It was just very like, yeah, violin.
It was over the top.
Yeah, it was over the top. And you know, when you see people do things like that, they think it's hard. Like they think like this shit really cool, you know.
Yeah. I mean, in order to do stuff that's over the top like that, you have to believe in it as a performer.
Yeah.
You have to drink the Kool-Aid a little bit, you know?
Drinking the Kool-Aid. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Going back to some of the things classical musicians don't like about the classical crossover. Now, I know that a lot of classical crossover musicians, they do classical music as well. There was a famous flute player. He was like a sir, like he was a knight.
Oh, James Galway.
Yeah, he did the classical crossover thing.
I was gonna bring him up next. Actually, it's funny you brought him up.
Yeah, because I know that you started studying flute. So like,
yeah, but I've been listening to James Galway because he's got one of the best. I think he's a great musician. But again, man, I'm not going to go and listen to him play Green Sleeves, like, or Danny Boy or whatever. Like, I'd much rather listen to him play something out of the standard book of repertoire for the violin. But that's just me. I'm not saying that you're a bad person if you do really like his version of Danny Boy. But like, you know what I mean? But he's an excellent musician and he can sell any phrase, in my opinion.
It's like, you know, when you hear him play that, you know, you just think of like fields in like Ireland or something.
Oh my God. Or like the Shire or whatever. Oh, or like, goodness. Yeah, some Lord of the Rings shit, man, for sure.
Yeah, but dude has chops though, you know. So
for sure, yeah, that's what I'm saying. He can throw down.
Yeah, I just think that like, so when you hear, I think a lot of times as like someone with a traditional music education, you see these classical crossover people. You think you hear them play like any top 40 song, and you're like, well, they can play that, but can you play like this cadenza? You know, and I mean, think about it, because some songs they're like four notes, the whole verse, like that's it, you know, four notes. But when you're like, well, they can't rip this cadenza, yeah, so yeah, I don't know about that, but some can, like Sir James Galloway. I don't know if I've ever heard Kenny G ever play anything classical.
No, but there are old recordings of him playing like legit jazz music, like. There are recordings of him just ripping on some legit jazz. Like he's got legit chops underneath there somewhere, underneath that hair probably.
Underneath that hair. You know, it's so wild because he's a staple of, I would just say, like saxophone players, like the history. Because if you ask sure. anybody.
Name a saxophone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Kenny G, you know, like I played a song at my wedding, you know. Like.
Oh, yeah.
So,
but everyone also, when you ask them what saxophonist, you know, in their head, they know there's a more legitimate saxophonist up there, but, and then they kind of smirk and go, Kenny G.
Yeah. Oh, I used to piss off all of my friends that play hip hop violin, because they'll play something and I'll be like, well, that was dope, but have you ever heard of Lindsey Sterling? You know, like, do you know the devil went down to Georgia?
No.
That was something that was always asked whenever we would play. I would go to gigs, like, we would play, like, all this hip-hop and stuff, and then, like, you'd have this one guy that come up, well, do you know the devil went down to Georgia, sonny? And I'm like, well, you know, after a while, I started saying, like, what's that? Never heard of it. And, like, I remember at a college I did that.
Oh, you didn't know that song at first?
No, I totally knew Charlie Daniels. Oh, yeah, okay. I knew it. But I started telling people I'd never heard of it. And I told this one guy, they said, well, gosh darn, you better go find that out. That boy can play that violin. You know? Oh, man, I've been in the South way too long.
Oh man, yeah, you nailed it, dude.
Oh man! See,
I feel like I actually met that guy just for a second. Yeah,
we all met that guy. If he did a gig. Oh man, what is that? There's this one. Oh man, it's like every saxophone player plays it. I think it's by George Michael or something, and it's like,
oh, Careless Whisper. Yeah.
Do you ever have people be like, "Yo, can you play that song?" Like.
Yeah, man, in the funk band that I used to play with back, you know, like 7-8 years ago, the one that I started actually here in Blacksburg, man, it got requested so much because that was the height of the video on YouTube, and so as a way of like combating that and having control over it, we actually started programming our own cover of that song, nice. so that people would stop. Requesting it. Man. A lot of times we would do it. It was like, and then after everyone that's listening is drunk, it's like that was like a great encore or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, those songs.
But yeah, Careless Whisper by George Michael, man. I mean, it is a little bit the bane of my existence.
Yeah. It's sex though.
It is pure sex, unadulterated pure sex.
Oh man. Well, I think that the classical crossover is not as bad as people make it out to be. But I think the biggest thing with the classical crossover is the fact that classical crossover is not necessarily for musicians. It's for the audience. It's for people listening. That is the whole reason, I think, why the classical crossover became too. Because, like, you know, you could play all these dope concertos, sonatas, you know, all these crazy things. But, you know, sometimes it's like you're playing into the void if you play things like that at gigs.
I mean, that kind of touches on what we spoke about last week too.
Yeah. So that's a way to connect people more to classical music and classical musicians, because, like, you know, I don't know any pieces for like baritone sax or, you know, or any weird instruments. But when someone sees like, you know, some like Blues Brothers or some, you know, random someone playing the sax, it's like, oh my goodness, like that's, I know that song. Like
yeah,
I saw
yeah,
it on
yeah.
a movie or something, or just any way, any instruments played, you know, in a different way. So like Devil Went Down to Georgia, that would be one, like any, you know, pop toony song Kenny G plays. So I think that it might, in our eyes as the musicians, be one of those things where it's like, gosh, they're playing that again. But they're actually helping us out by being those musicians, because they bridge the gap. Because when you see something like that, you might be inclined to, I don't know, check out a 20th century saxophone quartet or not.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's very important.
And I mean yeah, and but I mean, even the best, even the Pulitzer Prize winning chamber ensembles that just play really serious repertoire, man, you know that there's, you know that their concert closers are always some sort of crowd pleaser, like it don't mean a thing, a thing. You know, they all do, yeah, everyone does something like that, you know, just like, I'm sure that, or something light at least. I mean, I guess I couldn't really see like Emerson Quartet or something doing that, but like, I know that saxophone quartets that want to get booked definitely include a little bit of that fluff on their program.
Gotta have the fluff.
Gotta have some fluff.
It lightens the mood.
Yeah.
I think I spoke about it last week. I saw the saxophone trio at Brown University like years back. It was Trio Saxiana. It was too much for me. It was just 20th century notes flying all over the place. And I'm like, well, you got me, Danny boy? You know, like... Or the Saints go marching in, because
yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
It was too much. Oh my goodness!
You got me, Danny boy.
You're like, oh man.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, cut it. It's like open up a bag of chips during it, like during the rest.
You crack a can of Coke during the rest. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you need to lighten this up. Well, thank you, Tyler, for coming on again with our classical talks. We're going to keep, I like having you on, because we can talk about classical music and then we can talk about other stuff. I think next week we're going to talk about some hip hop music. Tyler is a fan of hip hop. I am as well. But we do listen to opposing styles. I would say I listen to more of the, you know, degrade woman, get money, violent side. And Tyler listens to the positive stuff. So
do I? Is that true?
I mean,
I don't know.
I always call it soul brother hip hop. And then even though, like, I feel bad saying, like,
I got my Kendrick Lamar shirt on though.
Oh, look at you! Oh snap! Nice. Got my George Washington type hoodie.
Yeah. You look like you're crossing the Mississippi or whatever, the Ohio River.
Oh man. Nice.
Yeah, man, it's fun. It's fun being on, dude. I can't wait for the next one.
Excellent. And we'll be continuing these talks with Tyler on the Dance More Laugh More podcast. Thank you everyone for watching this episode and listening to this episode. If you're watching on YouTube, please like this video and subscribe to my channel. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, please subscribe to this podcast as well. Tell your friends, tell your mama, tell everyone you know. Until next time, this was the Dance More, Laugh More podcast. I'm DJ Calculations Of, and this was Tyler Flowers, the Sax Zaddy. Yeah. Until next time, y'all.